Welcome to Beyond the Matrix, the radio program that dares you to think outside the box of convention and soar with the free minds of this world, and who knows, maybe worlds beyond. Today, I'll never get this right. Today, I've got someone who's going to be talking quite a lot about our powers, our mental powers. He's got a fabulous book called The Infinite Possibility of a Balanced Brain, Limitless You. And we're going to pick his brain and find out what he's talking about, balanced brain and brain training. It's going to be a great hour, so stay with us. And let me introduce to you a very interesting man, Lee Gerdes. Hello, Lee.
Hello.
Thank you for coming on the show. I hope that didn't scare you when I said we're going to go way beyond the Matrix.
No, that's where I like to go.
Okay, cool. Well, in fact, the reason why I asked you to come on was because you've got something very fresh and dynamic to talk about, and I'm into the book, not all the way through it, but I'm loving what I'm reading. So, first of all, let me just tell people, do you have a website, Lee?
Yes, it's Brain State Tech, BrainStateTech.com.
Okay, did you get that, everybody? BrainStateTech.com. I'll be repeating it through the hour so you know how to find Lee's book. I'm sure it's all over the place with Amazon and everything else, but you're probably going to want to check out his site. All right, so we're going to be talking all over the place about, well, what made you, my first question, of course, is let's talk about your background because it's kind of eclectic.
Yeah.
I'll call it an eclectic mix of science and spirit and my kind of person.
Thank you. You could say I just had difficulty in making up my mind, or you could be complimentary and say I was eclectic. It depends on how nice
let's
you are.
Let's go with eclectic. It's so much more. Well, first of all, I do know the trouble with making up your mind. I think it was a very healthy when you're young to not have a clue what you're going to do when you grow up.
Yes, I don't know that any of us do, but I did love math and physics. I still do. So that's where I started. And then I bridged that science background into information processing or computer software eventually, and worked in that field, and then became awfully interested in the question why I was on this planet. And so got a degree in theology, and then that went to, well, how is my understanding of why I'm on the planet manifesting in my behavior, and then studied clinical psychotherapy too.
I love it. And can you give us an idea of what brought you to write? Is this your first book?
This is my first book, and I've written this book to demonstrate a little bit of the possibilities that we all hold between our ears. And I don't think we have, I don't think we have any concept yet of how far we can go, not as individuals in the world as we know it, and not collectively as a society, as a human race. I don't think we have any concept of where we can go. So it's very, very exciting. This time, and it's very exciting to be working in this field. But I started it because of need. Need is the mother of invention, some have said, and for me that was precisely correct. In the early 90s, I was assaulted. One of the youth had a baseball bat. I had a post-traumatic stress from that incident. I dealt with that in every known modality I could over the next 8-9 years to try to free myself of the symptoms of post-traumatic stress. I was unsuccessful at dealing with those modalities, and I could not believe that the symptoms that I displayed sometimes were me. And so I began to think of a brain and as I would a piece of computer software. I mean, that's my background. So you always go towards your what you know, right?
Sure.
And so that's what I did. And in thinking about it that way, I thought, well, what if it is processing data in an imbalanced way instead of adding column one and adding column two and coming out with totals of the two? What if it only adds part of column two for some reason? So I thought that was kind of funny that I thought about that. I would hook myself up with old style electrodes at the time and look at my brain pattern when I was feeling good. Then I would hook myself up and look at my brain patterns when I wasn't feeling so good at all. And I would see distinct differences. And then I decided that I would use a basic law of quantum physics demonstrated by the double slit theory, that which is observed is changed. And you know that that's true. I mean, all of us
know
that.
Yes, in fact, I was going to ask you, you answered my question, which was,
yeah,
you know, how can you know that by observing yourself in these exercises, you weren't affecting them?
Yeah, because, you know, you've all been somewhere sometime, and we felt somebody looking at us, and we turned, and when we saw them looking at us. So it was simply their observation that changed us, that had an effect on us. And so I used that basic technique because I'd already tried biofeedback and neurofeedback, and that was somewhat helpful but not really helpful for me, even after a number of sessions. So I used that technique, and I used it a number of times by looking at my brain pattern as if it were balanced. And lo and behold, I felt a lot better. And then I found out that the symptoms that I had were gone. That was about 8.5 years ago. And then,
what were the symptoms, can I ask?
Yeah, I had night sweats consistently, so bad that I would have to have an exchange of pillows so one would dry.
Wow.
I found myself to anger easily, take things way too personally. I would feel very uncomfortable with somebody behind me. So if I was in a line at a grocery store or at a theater or something, I would get very uncomfortable. So I would need to turn sideways, or I would need to wait till a shop until it was later and there would be nobody in the store. And then I would sort of have memories or thoughts about the incident or what I thought about the incident in interrupt my thinking patterns. Okay, those are all very commonly known in terms of the world of post-traumatic stress. Many men and women coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan tell you about that. They're facing those exact things. So,
what exactly is post-traumatic syndrome? And we use these terms, but obviously, to the layman or the layperson, we recognize this as being a deep memory or a condition that you've got registered in the mind. But can you give us a more clinical understanding of exactly what post-traumatic syndrome is before we talk about how your work helps heal it?
Yes, thank you so much for that question. I can't tell you the number of times I skip over that, and it's very important for a person's understanding. Thanks for that. When you think about, let me give you something that happened from one of our clients, and I've written about it in the book, because I think that will demonstrate a little bit. One of our clients had the umbilical cord wrapped around their neck at birth, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And because the umbilical cord was wrapped around the neck multiple times, as the fetus developed, the brain knew enough that it would not develop things that were not absolutely necessary for life. And so it didn't develop its use of arms and legs very well. It didn't develop his use of his vision or his hearing or his speech. He couldn't cry. He didn't hear very well. He didn't see very well. Now, understand how wonderful that is. The brain saved his life, okay? And when it found out after his birth that it saved his life and now it's functioning, it's developed a pattern, a process, and that process is safe, and it means for that brain in that person that this is life. This is the way to sustain life, and that's its purpose. But
wow.
Once we saw what the purpose was of the brain in terms of its function, we said, oh, hey, look at this. It's way out of balance. And so we helped that person balance his brainwave pattern, optimize his brainwave pattern, and guess what happened? He was able to speak even more fluently. His mother had taught him to speak before then, but he was much better with language skills. He was able to see for the first time. He was able to start using the lower half of his body again. He had much more confidence, and he had a lot of clarity of thought and cognitive ability that he didn't have before. Now, that is pretty much a miracle to most of us. But to a brain with tens of millions of neurons, and even those tens of millions having tens of thousands of possible connections, so you're talking about literally billions of possibilities for connections. Wow. That's larger than the internet on the planet Earth that's between your ears.
It's mind-boggling, if you'll pardon
okay.
the pun.
Yeah. I like that pun. and so when we're talking about trying to describe what it is that post-traumatic stress is, it's simply this. The brain develops a pattern at a specific time and in a specific event for a specific purpose to help keep the organism alive. And it does not know when that pattern is way great. It doesn't know to release that pattern when it doesn't need it anymore. So when a man comes back or a woman comes back from Iraq and Afghanistan, they're in heavy traffic in Phoenix, five lanes, they have their wife or husband and child in the car. They see an old car on the side of the road. They swing wildly across all these lanes of traffic to get away from that old car, and their spouse is screaming at them. And then they realize, oh, what am I doing? Because why? Because the automatic function that was created by that brain pattern to keep that individual alive in Iraq meant that they would stay away from old vehicles on the side of the road, which were likely bombs. Okay?
Okay, now where does emotion fit into this? Because, oh boy, is this a... You talked about all the many millions, really, of neural networks. How do we work in the emotional aspect of the trauma?
Well, it's actually just part of the automatic function. So when you talk about, let's talk about anger, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Anger is actually probably a secondary emotion. It's not primary.
Primary is fear.
Fear-based, yes. Fear-based fight or flight is primary.
Right.
And the emotion that you see would be like a symptom. So you would sneeze, you would have a cold. You know, the cold is a virus, right? That's the cause. And the sneeze and the description of it, the cold, that's simply the symptom.
Mm-hmm.
Anger is simply the symptom. The emotion is simply what's seen. It's the visible side of it all. And it's not the driving force. When I have an emotion, let's say I see a very touching movie. I saw one lately about, you know, the schizophrenic that played the cello or something. I can't remember now what it was. And you know, I was very touched by that movie. Well, that touched my compassion. how I saw myself as connected to other people, right? And touched my value system, the need I have to be part of the whole, and my understanding that as the whole is raised, as the bottom part of us is raised, all of us are raised. It's like raising the water in a body of water in a lock, and the ship is raised, right?
Sure.
And so we have to be connected so that we can, in fact, you know, raise the water, so we can, in fact, change culture, so we can make this a better place to be, to live. Well, that, in terms of what we do, is we're trying to bring that brain into balance so that that pathology called post-traumatic stress, or that brain pattern that was developed during a stressful time, is no longer needed. It sees itself as new, as different. New connections are made. And then the pathologies that go along with that, the symptoms, if you will, that go along with that, night sweats, anger easily, the paranoia, the insecurity, the over competence to see things as directed itself, all of those kinds of things are just disappear. You know, they just go away.
Here's a tricky question for you. How does the telepathic process of interacting at the collective unconscious work into your discussion of balancing the brain? Let's say that a person is... It's a tricky one, isn't it? I told you we were going to go beyond the matrix.
Okay, here we go. We're going down the rabbit hole, folks.
Because, you know, I'm thinking, great, so you've got someone who comes to you, which we're going to be talking about exactly. I don't think we're going to be able to get exactly in the time we've got together here, but an idea of what you're doing working with people, and that they do achieve this balance that you're discussing, and they go out into the maniacal world and start interacting telepathically with some pretty unstable people, which we will admit seems to be occurring on planet Earth at the moment.
What we know about, let me, instead of using the word telepathic, let me use the word information processing.
Okay.
Because I don't know if you know of the work of William Tiller. Was the research physicist, head research physicist at Stanford, is Professor Emeritus there. Was in the movie What the Bleep, if you've seen that movie,
uh-huh.
And helped produce that. He's a friend of mine, and he and I have talked a lot about this and worked on many things, but Bill has proven unequivocally that information can be taken from the mind and manifested in the world. And there is a very specific process for that information to be manifested. Now, Think and Grow Rich could help some people if their brains were balanced so that you can get that information processed through the various areas, in and out. But if they're not balanced, they can't do that. Let me give you a little sidebar to that. Do you meditate, or you know people that meditate?
Oh, yes, I meditate regularly.
Okay. So you know that there are a lot of people who try for months, years to meditate, but can't accomplish it, right? Because
mm-hmm.
they can't slow their brain down enough. They can't quiet the monkey brain, if you will, sufficiently to be able to get into a meditative state. Now, when they train their brain, when they balance those and optimize the brainwave patterns, they can meditate enormously well and very quickly. Big advantage. And it's the same with starting to understand information coming to us from beyond ourselves, or it's the same as we're trying to espouse or create or manifest information from within ourselves out into the world. Both of those things are true. We're much more able to do that if, in fact, we have a brain that is well-balanced, is in a homeostasis, if you will, and is relaxed and self-regulated, we're much more able to do that. So as an artist, as a dancer, as a basketball player, as a singer, a musician, as a composer, as a NASCAR driver, as a football player, as a baseball player, as a golfer. Oh, wow, golfers are big time. But all of these people can, in fact, manifest their intention, and sometimes through their body or sometimes on a canvas or sometimes in a poem, right? Whatever their intention is, they can manifest that intention much better and much more clearly when, in fact, they have a balanced brain.
Okay, so at this point, we're going to have to ask you, what is the process that you are using to help people achieve this state of brain balance?
I'm going to tell you this process, and it's going to be so simple that you're going to think that you can run out and build this on your own, because it is simple in terms of what we do. But yet, underlying it, of course, it isn't. But here's what we do. We put sensors on the scalp that sense brain patterns. We record those brain patterns in different brain states. For instance, when the person's relaxed, when the person's at task, and someplace in between. Then we apply a set of algorithms to all that information, all that data. And that data, by the way, is taken, to give you a little idea, we take data at 256 samples every second. We take 65,000 plus pieces of information in every one of those samples, and then we graph that data so that we can see how the function in that area is broken down. Don't you love math? I mean, it's just so beautiful.
I'm hearing it going, okay, I can get this because I'm not math friendly. But
this
it's pretty exciting.
Yeah, and so we do that, and then after we apply these algorithms, we can see and show people where, in fact, their brain is out of balance. Now,
that's amazing.
We can also see then their brain is out of balance. We can also, because we have 13,000 clients now, we also have developed algorithms to start understanding what that out-of-balance situation would mean. For example, we can see if there's a trauma in a person's life in the last trimester or first year of their life. And we can see, with a high degree of accuracy, what category of trauma that is. For instance, we can see if it's a trauma where the organism was thinking of itself as isolated or abandoned, or on the other side, if the organism was thinking of itself as infringed upon. So, for example, let me give you two examples. One person, we see huge difference in the area that says isolation or abandonment. We ask, what happened? Well, my father was killed in a car wreck when my mother was 8 months pregnant with me.
Wow.
Okay? That's a trauma of isolation or abandonment for that fetus, I'll guarantee you. The other one, okay, we see huge infringement at birth. What happened? Well, they didn't know that I was a hemophiliac. And they did a surgical procedure on me, and then they sent me home, and by the time I got home, I'd almost bled to death as an infant. They had to rush me back to the hospital, and, you know, they didn't know they didn't know I was a hemophiliac.
Okay, let me just interject a question here now. When you're talking about these people, are you suggesting that these are memories that they recall before they do the process with you? Or is this
no,
ability to remember coming from the work they're doing with you?
None of the above. It's not their ability to remember. It's our ability to read that brain pattern like you would read the rings of a tree.
Right, but I'm saying, what's the point where the person says, well, I was abandoned when I was... In other words, where is that cognizant moment where the client is telling you, yes, that's because this happened to me?
We don't need to know that information, by the way, at all, because all
uh-huh.
we're doing, we're just trying to balance the brainwave patterns. But when we do the assessment, we may ask the client, you know, did you have a trauma of isolation or abandonment at birth? And then they come back and say, oh, yeah, my father was killed in a car accident when my mother was 8 months pregnant.
Okay, I was thinking that these were buried memories that somehow were being released through the work with you. Okay.
No, not at all. That has nothing to do with memory.
Okay.
It has to do with measurement of brain pattern. And so we read that brain pattern like you would read the rings of a tree. And reading the rings of a tree, algorithms have been created, which can be applied to the rings of a tree and tell you back as much as 2,000 years what weather patterns have been in that place.
Right.
We're doing
Isn't it similar
thing.
As, in a sense, also like reading the iris?
Well, I don't know that. I don't know that.
Okay.
Sorry, I
just thought I'd interject that to show you how clever I really am.
Maybe you are, and much more than I, because I don't.
Sorry,
I
didn't mean to interrupt your flow here.
Yeah,
because
I'm a scientist, and I have to measure things and stuff before I say,
mm-hmm.
yeah, I know something about it. But I don't know anything about that. So
okay, so then in the process of reading these patterns, you're saying that you can go back to absolutely past birth to the state of the fetus. Is this correct?
Well. I don't know
Not
what
exactly.
go back to the past birth means, because all I'm seeing is a brainwave pattern. And I'm going to show that brain a pattern which will help it to balance itself. And
how do you do that?
Then, by showing the brain itself in a balanced state.
How do you do that? I'm ready.
Well,
lay this on me.
You do that by creating a mirror for itself. Like, you would do it exactly like if you were taking a hot shower in a small bathroom in a cold climate and the mirror got fogged up. You would do it by taking a towel and rubbing away a space where it could see itself.
Mm-hmm.
And you would do it, in this case, by translating electromagnetic energy that is firing in the brain in a specific area, translating that energy into sound energy and playing it back to the brain. And that brain will gravitate towards its own reflection.
And how do you create these sound patterns?
By determining in a quarter of a second of time, right, 4 times a second, or now we're getting actually down. My guys wouldn't like that if I said that, because we're getting it down to 6 times a second now, Lee, and 10 times a second by next year. Okay. so we're real geeks here, you know. X number of times a second, okay. We're looking at that brain pattern, and we're picking out a dominant frequency, and we're changing that dominant frequency to a note. And we're playing that note back to that brain, and as the notes change, you know, and make a pattern, the brain sees its itself associated with that pattern, and it starts moving towards that pattern, and then pretty soon what you have is that pattern dominates. It's so cool.
This is just completely awesome information, Lee. You got to this process from your own experience?
The need is the
mother
of
invention. You developed this whole concept from your own experience with your own post-traumatic stress disorder?
Yep, that's where it started. But then I thought,
that's amazing.
Wow, I don't have these symptoms anymore. Now I can go out and, you know, find a mate and really have fun and make some money. And then what happened was my son flunked out of school. And he was making some bad decisions. And so that broke my heart. And I thought maybe I could help him. But before I did, I knew that I would rather die than I would hurt him. So I wanted to make sure that what I was doing wouldn't hurt him. And so I went to a cabin for a little over a month, and I hooked myself. It's kind of the crazy professor. I hooked myself up. I hooked myself up in every way I could. And I started showing my brain patterns that were in areas that should make me feel bad and not good. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And my brain would listen to that, and it would start to move in that direction, and then it would say, nah, thanks. I'm not going there, dude. And I couldn't get it to do it. It was the funniest thing. And I would laugh, I can't tell you. Some people say, oh, this guy really is crazy. Well, I know that, but that's not the question. It was so funny because I found out that I couldn't, you know, I couldn't distort the pattern in a negative way. And once I found that out, boy, now I'm really going after it. So I went back to my son and said, okay, here's the deal. You go back to school and I pay you. He's listening now, right? Because he knows I'm going to bribe him.
It all failed.
Yeah, absolutely. And so he says, yeah, we finally reached a number. And I said, oh, by the way, you have to let me train your brain too. What's that? Well, oh, you're crazy, Dad. I know that. Okay. He did. And he went back to school and immediately got on the dean's list. Then we had a number of his buddies who were also kind of flunkies, if you will, flunked out. And he trained them. I set him up with equipment and software, and he trained them, and they went back to school and got on the dean's list. And that's when I quit my job and really started this in earnest, saying, wow, we've got something. Potentially, we've really got something.
Where are you located? Because, of course, I'm thinking, I want to have this.
Well, we're located, there's about 130 offices now in 19 countries around the world.
Really?
Yeah. And we are located, the home office here is in beautiful Scottsdale, Arizona. And we have our education center here where we educate people who are licensing our technology to go out and use it. And we also have a training center here where we train clients as well.
That's remarkable. Okay, let's tell people, how can they find out about where they can, 18 countries, you said?
Yeah. And
where would somebody go to get the information of where they could get in touch with you in their specific country? Is that your website again?
Uh-huh. If you look on the website under office locations, you'll see where we are. And Limitless You, the book, is at Barnes & Noble, Amazon, and I think a number of other stores and places.
Okay, so that's a great place to start, is to read the book and get more in-depth information about what you do.
Yeah, and
all right, so here's a question that I think is kind of a logical question, which is, why doesn't the brain do that on its own? In other words,
because...
Okay, go ahead.
It's the same reason that you don't do some things on your own. For instance... You sometimes will develop a pattern or a habit, and even though that pattern or habit is not good for you, you will keep doing it. And you will seek to do it because it is familial. So let's say a child is given soda. And that child is will can be continue to drink soda, perhaps into their young adult and then adult life. And it's well known that especially too much soda isn't good for you. But we do it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And or when we see people who are addicted to substances, when we've seen over 1,000 of those people, when we see those folk, we know right away that they are not dealing with an issue of choice. They are dealing with an issue of self-medication, which is trying to offset a brain imbalance.
So are you able to get people addicted, people addicted with their various addictions, back on the path of liberation?
Generally within 2 days.
Get serious.
2 days, generally. In 2 days, most of the urges are mitigated.
That is remarkable stuff. Let's get some people to call in here. The call-in number is 888, this is toll-free, 815-9756. That's, again, 888-815-9756. Call in if you've got a question for Lee, which I'm sure many of you do, because it's just such a, I mean, what he just said was, in 2 days, most addicted people have the addiction mitigated through the process of brain training. That is some very exciting news. So you're welcome to call in and talk to Lee and ask a question.
It doesn't
mean how many
that
people
after,
go ahead, Lee.
It doesn't mean that after 2 days that will stick. It generally has to be trained. It has to be trained longer than that in order to make that continued to dominate. But the beauty of it is, after a couple of days, the urge is mitigated, and then after anywhere from 15 to 25 sessions, 20 sessions, give or take five, that person is likely free of that addiction, and that's true over 85% of the time.
Here's a question for you. Do you ever work with twins? I would love to know what your research has shown you about this dysfunction or like imbalance reflected into in a situation with twins. Have you had any experience with that? Do you love my question?
It's kind of funny because I started working with twins data before my last. And that's what gave me information to help create the algorithms in my last company. The company's called Net Perceptions. And the twins data was taken from the Minnesota study of twins. And since looking at brain patterns, we've looked at, I think, three or four sets is all I know of. And we see some very interesting patterns, but because of them being interesting, it doesn't allow me to say anything definitive. I can't even make any necessary hypotheses about things. But I can tell you a case study or a case look with one twin twins, one of whom was very active and one of whom was very shy and inactive. The one that was very active had a sympathetic dominance in her system, in her autonomic nervous system. And that sympathetic dominance was evidenced by the fact that she was born first and, you know, came out, and the other one took a long time. So she was the one lowest. The other was parasympathetic dominant. So the one was in sort of a fight or flight state, and the other was in sort of a freeze state. And that was a very interesting scenario, but that's the most I know about it, really.
It's such an amazing dynamic when you've got when you consider the process of the process of fetal development into twins and how they are so utterly attached through life. Usually, interesting
and
stuff to think about their brain patterns and how they correspond.
But it's also interesting, is it not, to think, well, you know, these systems were very, very similar, as is evidenced by how they look, right?
Mm-hmm.
But still, even that means that they would have different fingerprints.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, if you took a brain reading, brain pattern from one to the other, those brain patterns would even be more distinct than their fingerprints.
Well,
which
sure, because they're also going to be reacting to condition, right?
Differently, right? Potentially.
Uh-huh.
Which means they build different networks, which tells me that genetics will form a likelihood or a possibility, perhaps, of certain things, but will not be determinative. And the scientist that really has nailed that down is a guy by the name of Bruce Lipton. And I appreciate his work a lot. And he's a biologist and doctor, and he has nailed that down to tell us that environment dictates a genetic makeup and a genetic pattern. So the question then becomes, well, what if I have a genetic pattern for possibility for whatever, but I have a very different environment between these two twins, would that genetic pattern manifest differently? And according to the study of twins, Minnesota study of twins, that's true. The genetic pattern can, in fact, manifest differently.
Mm-hmm. Heavy stuff, Lee. So since this program
This is wonderful.
Yeah, it's heavy in a very wonderful way. I mean, it's a little bit hard for you know, those who are listening who are not scientifically oriented to get around it, because it's kind of, you know,
scientific. I'm sorry.
That's okay. I'm with you.
Okay.
But, you know, one question, of course, I do want to ask you, because the show is kind of got a spiritual bent, is, so how does spirit work into this state of balance, imbalance, and can a person be, I hate to use the word a spiritual person because it's a very overworked term, but how does spirit relate to the out-of-balance brain?
Thank you.
Can you finish my question for me, because I'm getting stuck?
Yeah. So how does spirit and brain balance interrelate?
Yes, the question. Thank you.
And the question is the most pertinent question of all. What I think that we do ultimately with when we balance a brain is we allow a person to see, to be in, and to be active decision-wise in a world, the world they live in, based on love instead of fear. And we actually can see that dynamic in a brain pattern. So
wow.
we can tell how connected a human being is to themselves, to others, and to the creation around them, or how non-connected they are. And we can help that connection manifest when we balance that brain. And many people will tell us after they've go through a number of sessions, they will say something like, you didn't tell me this was going to be a spiritual experience. And I want to say to them as a theologian, you know what? Every experience is a spiritual experience. But as a scientist, I say, well, you know what? We measured this area of your brain, and it was here when you started, and now it's here. See, now it's balanced, and guess what? Now you're feeling more connected to yourself and to those around you, And so you're able to manifest that connection. And that, I believe,
that's remarkable.
It is an underpinning of spirituality.
And how many, do you have an average of how many sessions people need? I realize that we're talking glittering generalities here, but on an average, how many sessions do people go through before they achieve this balancing of the brain?
Okay, I'm going to answer the question, but I want you to know first that there are huge outliers. For example, the young man, his name's Justin, and he's in the book Limitless You, written about him, and he wanted me to use his name, by the way. Justin's had 70 sessions. The average person has about 20 sessions, 15 to 25. But the men and women we've trained coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan with PTSD have had an average of about 12 sessions. A session lasts for roughly an hour and a half, and the client is really very passive during the whole session. They sit in a comfortable chair, the chairs lean back, the sensors are placed on their scalp, the earphones are in their ears, and that's pretty much it. They're asked to think about specific things during the process, if they can, and they usually will, because that will facilitate, you know, the brain changing more rapidly. But even if they don't do that...
Why has Justin had 70 sessions?
Because Justin was born with a brain that was hugely out of balance.
Oh.
He could not walk. He could not talk. He couldn't cry. He couldn't see. He couldn't move.
Oh, this is the person you were telling us about earlier,
right.
The umbilical cord.
Right. I mean, he had huge problems to go through. So it depends on what the person's experienced and what the brain patterns were to help the person stay alive, on how much change that brain has to go through. And that's why I hesitated about even mentioning that it's 15 to 25 sessions, because
sure. It
is.
That's why I hesitated about asking you.
Yeah, but for some people, it's going to take a lot more than that. Fibromyalgia.
Now, are you able to see, for example, let's say that a person has a trauma. We all have something stuck in the brain, or, well, it's not memory, you say. It's frequencies
it's
in the brain, right?
Right. It's different for females than it is for males. Now, the corpus callosum, or the center line of the brain, is more permeable for females than it is for males. And that's why females can multitask better than males can. In other words, a female can hold the baby, make dinner, talk on the phone, and plan tomorrow's menu all at the same time. And when I say that, the hair stands up in the back of my neck. Because her brain can go from left to right and right to left very quickly, almost two and a half to three times faster than mine.
Well, you've
by
just
the
pushed
same...
the button, because I wanted to ask you, how does this fit in with the left and right brain concept? We've got the spiritual approach to that, left and right, and we've got the scientific approach. Why do you laugh? My questions make you laugh.
Oh, because it's... I don't know how you come up with these questions, but wow. I mean, you're talking about a whole, I could talk on this very question for 2 hours with 18 different diagrams, but I'm going to try to.
You're
going to
have to come back on, Lee. I think we have way too much to talk about for just one show.
Okay. But what the question is left and right brain. Guess what we found?
Yeah.
We found that we know this. Left brain neurons are close together. It's used for sequential processing. It dominates in sequential processing. In other words, if I do what is A, what is B, what is C, what is D, if I'm going down a list, I'm doing that, you know, task one, task two, task three, task four. That's a more or less a left brain process. If I look at context, if I'm looking, oh, how is this room laid out? What color is on the wall? Et cetera, et cetera. If I'm looking at context, I'm looking more from a right side dominance where neurons are further apart, and that allows me to see, that gives me a context. It gives me a larger kind of area to experience. So when we talk about left and right brain, we're really talking about how one is dominant over the other. But please understand that when we talk about left to right brain heretofore, we've been really incorrect in our understanding of it, because as we get an expression from outside of ourselves into our brain, and that expression is recorded in a memory, that memory is not recorded on one side or the other. It's recorded on both sides. It's as if we had a parallel processor or two computers that did the same thing. In case one went down, the other one would be able to pick up. Well, the brain does the brain does exactly the same thing. It parallel processes all the time.
But is it processing different aspects of the one thing in regards to the method the brain works with?
Not in terms of memory. Let me give you an example. There's been thousands of cases where they've had to do hemispherectomies. In other words, they've had to remove half the brain, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe a gunshot in one half or whatever. But when they've had to remove the right half of the brain, let's say, there's one thing that doesn't work, and that's the left arm. However, all the memories the person has had, they're still there. They can, short-term, long-term memory, they're still there. Now, if they lose the left half of the brain, then the right arm doesn't work. But, again, all the memories are there. However, in the left half loss, you also lose, or at least the ability for language processing is greatly reduced, because that's dominant on the left where neurons are close together. And language is a very, very high usage process for the brain. It's probably
that's
one of the more complicated things. So,
Lee, our time is almost up. I really got to ask you to come back on the show, because we're only getting warmed up here. Okay,
yeah,
great.
Your questions could lead me for the next year, I think. You have great questions.
I tried
questions.
To warn
Thank you.
I'm very honored, because I really do love having scientists. I love people that are blending and merging science and spirit like you. And so I can't help but love to take the scientists a little bit out of left field, as they say, and listen to them say, "Whoa, that's a question." So thank you for being flexible and so knowledgeable and open to journeying out of the matrix and into the free will zone.
Yep.
All right, Lee. I'm gonna say goodbye. Thank you very much. I will call you to see if I can get you back on, and we'll take up from here. And in the meantime, everybody, don't forget to get this book. This is pretty exciting information. Limitless You is the book, The Infinite Possibilities of a Balanced Brain by Lee Gerdes. And his website again is Brain State.
Yes. STATE.
BrainStateTech.com. So find out about this remarkable work and what it means for all of us to have the opportunity to discover so much more about how brains work. And with that, I'm going to say goodbye. Thanks again, Lee. Thanks to all of you for tuning in. Don't forget next week to call in. I mean, it's not very often you have a chance to speak to someone like Lee. And don't forget also to check my site, www.SyrianRevelations.net. Lots of great things are coming up. I've got a new book coming out, too. You're all waiting for it, Where Pharaohs Dwell, One Mystic's Journey Through the Gates of Immortality. Ha, Lee, I bet you could do something with that.
Yeah, I bet I could. It's fun.
All right. Bye, everyone. Thank you, Lee. I'll be back with you next week. Tune in and tell your friends to join us on Beyond the Matrix.